You want to do the intro?
I guess.
Hello, and welcome to Let's Pharmanize, a proud member of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. I'm Cal Vandegrift.
I'm Shane Gerritsen.
And I'm Kelly Kerr.
And today we're talking about how presidents die.
The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The views and opinions expressed within are those of the authors and speakers themselves and do not necessarily represent any affiliated institution or third party.
Today, we begin the first of a four-part series where we will be diving into the deaths of 40 United States presidents, from asthma to cholera to typhoid fever. The deaths of U.S. presidents hold a lot of intrigue and, in some cases, a shroud of mystery. Today's episode, we will cover the first 10 presidents who've served since 1789 to 1845. Start our conversation about a man who we should all be familiar with. That's right, it's the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. George Washington. Not only did Washington serve as the first U.S. president, he was also the general in command of the Continental Army and presided over the convention that was to form the U.S. Constitution. We all know the attributes of President Washington, however, some may not know the odd way in which he passed on December 14th, 1799. Let's rewind just 2 days before his untimely demise. December 12th is reported as a snowy day at Mount Vernon. Washington, known to supervise and oversee the farming activities of each day, set off on horseback in the late morning to attend to the 8,000-acre property he called home. He arrived back at the house around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, drenched from the wintry conditions. It was suggested to Washington to change a tire before proceeding with the rest of his day. Washington, who knew that guests were in his home, chose the more punctual route and remained in the wet clothes throughout the day. The next morning, Washington awoke to a sore throat that would nag him throughout the day, causing his voice to increasingly become more hoarse. That evening, during his weekly reading of the paper with his wife, Martha, and his secretary, Tobias Lear, Washington asked for his secretary to read aloud as he was unable to do so due to his throat. Washington was awoken at 2 a.m. by a terrible discomfort. Concerned, Martha said that she would retrieve help. Being the man of dignity that he was, he told Martha that he would sleep it off and that he could send for help the next morning. When the next morning finally came, Tobias Lear was fetched to the room, where he found Washington laying on the bed, having great difficulty breathing. Here's where things get pretty weird, though. Lear sent a messenger to Alexandria to retrieve a Dr. James Craik, a beloved friend of Washington's. At the request of George, Lear also sent for House Overseer George Rawlins, who proceeded to bleed Washington of half a pint of blood, or roughly a quarter of a liter, as Washington stated that the procedure cured him of previous illnesses.
Oh, gosh.
Now, let's remember that the typical human male contains anywhere from 4.5 to 5.7 liters of blood in the body at any given time. Just keep that in mind as we continue.
And how much did they take from him again?
About a quarter of a pint. Not much.
Okay.
Or, I'm sorry, half a pint, quarter of a liter. So, I don't know what that percentage is, but...
Quarter of a liter out of 5 liters? So, it's like a tenth.
Is that right?
No.
No, it's a 20th.
1/20th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know math.
Yeah. Let's mathmanize.
Let's mathmanize. Washington was then given a concoction of molasses, butter, and vinegar as a remedy for the throat. But you can imagine that this mixture was probably pretty viscous and actually quite difficult to swallow, which actually caused George to nearly suffocate and convulse on the bed trying to swallow this molasses mixture.
Gross.
Dr. Craik arrived at approximately 9 a.m. Now, this guy, you'll come to find, was not a very good doctor. After arriving, Craik determined that it would be necessary to intentionally produce a blister on the infected area to, quote, balance the fluids in his body. So he stuck
of his throat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Stuck like a hot piece of wood, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
And burned his throat. Balancing the fluids. He then gave Washington a vinegar tea mixture to gargle and, of course, decided to bleed him for a second time. Now, the exact amount is less certain. However, it is noted that it was much more than the first extraction. So we will be assuming that it means maybe half a liter of blood, 2 times as much. I don't know. So where are we now? 0.75 liters?
Yeah, that's too much.
Too much. Almost 20%. After realizing Craik was a bit out of his league, he fetched a second physician, Dr. Gustavus Brown, who was well known in the area for his excellent diagnosing ability. At 11 a.m., Dr. Brown had still not arrived, causing Craik to send for a third physician. At noon, he gave Washington an enema and proceeded to bleed him for a third time.
What were the contents of the enema?
I have no idea.
Okay.
What do you think it was?
Well, probably all that molasses vinegar that he almost choked on.
Just the molasses vinegar tea enema.
Ew.
Yeah.
They used smoke enemas a lot back in that
time. It could have
time.
Been.
I mean, for like anything from constipation to like hemorrhoids.
I don't really understand how an enema could help with a sore throat, but I mean, balancing the fluids.
Did they think that all of it's connected?
They probably weren't that forward thinking.
Okay.
This is miasma periods. I mean, we still don't know a whole lot about anything.
Actually, at this point, I think we had a pretty solid understanding of the body, because this was when more and more people were starting to do autopsies, and I think that information was circulating a little bit.
We're still 66 years before Ignaz Semmelweis and the hand-washing thing, though, yeah. So, you know, sterility
when did,
is not the best.
Da Vinci, I almost said DiCaprio, when did Da Vinci start doing, like, autopsies and publishing stuff? I know, you know what, let's not get into that, because I don't know for certain
that's
the history of, like, physiology.
A while before
I mean,
this, obviously.
That's like 1500s.
Yeah, that's like 1500s.
But then again, in that Outlander thing that I was watching, mm-hmm. you know, she's back in the American Revolution, she meets George Washington in that show. Anyways, she's worried that if people find out she's doing autopsies, they'd burn her at the stake for witchcraft.
I see.
I don't think that people were doing autopsies like regularly, IDK.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Not okay. Ideal conditions for science. As the two other physicians walked into Mount Vernon in the early afternoon, Craik was bleeding Washington for a fourth and final time. This bleeding is confirmed to have contained 32 ounces of blood, which is nearly a full liter on its own. I don't even know what we're at this point. It's over 2 liters.
I'm imagining that scene where where Sandy goes to see Patrick when he's treating SpongeBob for suds, and he's got, like, the hood on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. That's what's watching. The same.
Stuffing him full of corks.
Same thing.
Don't be silly, Gary. I don't get colds. I get the suds.
The doctors eventually discussed the situation and chose to give Washington an emetic, but to no success. Around 4:30 in the afternoon, with his condition worsening, Washington uttered the phrase, "I find I am going. My breath cannot last long. I believe from the first that this disorder would prove fatal." And around 5 o'clock, Washington got out of his bed for the first time that day to go sit in his favorite rocking chair for what he assumed would be his final time. He addressed the physician, saying, "Doctors, I die hard, but I'm not afraid to go. I believe from my first attack that I should not survive it. My breath cannot last long," he reiterated. He proceeded to thank all three doctors for their services, releasing two of the three, leaving only Craik, out of all three of them, to stay behind with him. Around 8 o'clock, Craik produced more blisters, this time on Washington's legs. Before passing, Washington asked that his body be laid to rest in the vault of Mount Vernon, but not before at least 3 days had passed to ensure his safe passage into heaven. Around 10 o'clock, Washington would succumb to his condition. His official cause of death was ruled to be epiglottitis. His body was on display in his casket for 3 days before being buried beneath the vault of Mount Vernon. His wife, Martha, would join them the very next year. He was 67 years old.
They killed him.
They straight up killed him.
He would have been fine. They murdered George Washington. What the heck?
You might not be surprised to find out that George Washington was the only president to die of epiglottitis. I mean,
because they were burning his epiglottis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, that maybe is more indicative that they had some idea about physiology if they were able to identify an epiglottis, because that's like a pretty small piece of anatomy that's like hidden down at the back of the throat.
I guess. There's kind of two openings, though, so it's kind of...
Yeah.
They already knew, I guess, that it was an epiglottis, but I don't know. Because there's two openings, right? There's the esophagus
and the trachea,
and then the epiglottis.
And the epiglottis is what, like, between the two,
that thing, yeah.
It makes that
so
sound.
I guess they knew of it. I mean, you could see it with, you know, even looking down someone's throat, I guess.
Can you?
I don't know.
Do you want to try? Open your mouth.
Maybe. Listeners, send us pictures of your epiglottis.
Any respiratory therapist out there, confirm for us, can you see the epiglottis straight up?
Remember that when we watched that video in the... like, of all those, like, wheezing people, and then one of them, like, put the camera down their throat.
Yeah.
So we couldn't see it with the naked eye, maybe, but if they were to, like,
you know, put a camera in your mouth.
Because that's what they have to do anyways. Yeah. They have to scope you, I guess.
That's what they did with George Washington. They just put like a narrow iPhone in his open mouth.
Take pictures it was probably of an older glass. iPhone, though. Maybe like an iPhone 3 or 4.
3 or 4, yeah.
Well, I mean, he didn't have teeth, so there's probably room.
That's true. They could have taken his dentures out to create more space.
Yeah.
For looking.
I didn't actually look this up, but I'm not even sure he had wooden dentures. I'm not sure if that's true.
It was made of, like, sheep's teeth.
Yeah.
And also teeth from the people who worked Mount Vernon, the slaves. Yep.
Yikes.
Anyways, you can cut that out if you want to.
Well, it's not wrong, I guess.
I know, it's not. It's really gross, though.
Factual.
It wasn't uncommon for, like, wealthy people back in the day, though. Because, I mean, they didn't have good dental care.
Yeah.
Oh, he never brushed his teeth. Are you kidding me? Let's be real. They didn't know what that was back in the day.
Fluoride, huh?
Yeah.
But yeah, they weren't wooden. I read something about that this year, or I talked to my history teacher.
The seat they were in, though, was made of wood. Like the actual denture.
Do you think it could have worsened his condition, though, like for infection purposes? It might have.
Like keeping rotting wood in your mouth, maybe.
Yeah. Or sheep teeth and whatever.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know.
Also, I think maybe burning the back of his throat. Like, he that already had, like, a cold or something, and then they were just, like...
Although he got... I don't know how fast the infection would spread, because he got that done at, like, 9 in the morning, and he was dead 13 hours later. So something had to...
I think he gave up, like...
He was just like, I don't want to be burned anymore. What are you doing? I bet he would not... Had he survived, those two would not have been friends anymore. I'm just saying.
Is that where you get the term crackpot from George Craig?
Craigpot?
Yeah, okay.
He's a craigpot doctor.
I don't Maybe. Know.
Eventually, we'll talk about Ignorance is Bliss, which is actually from a doctor that treated a president once. Anyways, let's jump into the next couple of presidents you probably know. Their deaths, at least the date specifically in which these two died. But you might not know specifically how they died and how interesting it was that they died on the same day. John Adams and Thomas Jefferson were both representatives of two conflicting theories on how the new nation should operate. Adams, a traditional Federalist, thought that more power and major decisions should be made directly by the federal powers given to them in the U.S. Constitution. Jefferson, who has been called a Democratic Republican, believed in the contrary, that the states should have the power to govern themselves and that the federal government should only be responsible for the things that they apply to every state in the Union. Knowing this information, it is incredible to believe that these two were able to construct the Declaration of Independence together and be major voices in the construction of the Bill of Rights at later constitutional conventions. I could go off and spend hours discussing each person's individual accolades, but instead I'll leave that for your own speculation to pursue. Now we must discuss the bizarre deaths that these two esteemed leaders faced on July 4th, 1826, exactly 50 years after they both signed the Declaration of Independence. The exact cause of death is much more set in stone for President Adams than it is for President Jefferson. Adams, at 91 years old, was no longer in the prime of his youth, to say the least. And as the days of June ended and July began, Adams would have been found in his bed, deeply asleep in a coma. Around noon on July the 4th, what some describe as a miracle, Adams awoke from his coma to state three famous words. We have an English teacher here. Does she know the three famous words?
Oh, ignorance is bliss? Is that what you said a second
no,
ago?
No, it's not okay, ignorance is bliss. It is Thomas Jefferson survives.
Oh.
Little did he know that half an hour later, his political opponent and longtime friend would pass from a much more complicated illness. The official cause of death for John Adams is cardiac arrest, suffered most likely from an atherosclerotic blockage. He passed around 6 o'clock that evening. Now let's get to the more interesting one. Thomas Jefferson, who at one point in his life traveled thousands of miles around the world as the first U.S. diplomat to France, was now in a bedridden condition. Back in 1818, Jefferson visited Warm Springs, Virginia, to sit in a mineral spring in hopes that it would cure him of his rheumatism. While the springs did help with his inflamed joints, it also gave him a nasty infection on his buttock. Jefferson would develop a case of septicemia that would be treated with a mix of sulfur and mercury. While this did help rid Jefferson of the infection, it worsened many of his comorbidities that would lead to his death a few years later. In 1825, while speaking to fellow President James Monroe, Jefferson claimed that he was having difficulty making water. Dr. Robley Dungleson was called in to aid the former president. He concluded that prostatic hypertrophy was leading to his urinary retention. So to solve the problem, Dungleson used a bougie, essentially an early version of a catheter to relieve his symptoms. Not very bougie.
So they knew what the prostate was.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This is like 30 years later, too. So
oh, right.
Maybe a little bit more advancement. I'm sure they probably knew the prostate by then.
Yeah.
Even in Washington times, I guess. So you can understand the issues with a catheterization in 1826 or 1825 in this point.
No sterility.
Absolutely no sterility going on.
Also, like, what did they have for tubing? Like, they didn't have plastic tubing.
Let me look up what exactly a bougie is, and maybe I can show you.
Like, the only thing that's coming to mind that would be hollow would be, like, a feather or, like, a snake fang.
A bone.
A bone, yeah.
Apparently, these bougies are still, still things.
I'm sure they're not made of the same material.
Mm. It just looks like a long tube. That's, like, all it is. But I don't know what the tubing would have been made out of. Maybe glass, but you have to.
Maybe, like leather?
Yeah, because you'd have to, you can't keep it straight. Maybe you can. So anyways, this catheterization inevitably caused pyelitis to develop in Jefferson.
Of course.
Of course, it was inevitable. By the end of June 1826, Jefferson was completely bedridden. His death finally occurred at 12:30 in the afternoon on July the 4th, most likely from a combination of exhaustion from intense diarrhea that he was suffering, toxemia from a kidney infection, uremia from kidney damage, and finally, orthostatic old age pneumonia. He had a whole bunch of problems.
Orthostatic old age pneumonia, wow.
Mm-hmm. Officially, Thomas Jefferson's cause of death, though, is from late-stage prostate cancer, actually diagnosed after his death in a more recent study. He was actually 83 years old when he died.
Wow.
Okay, let's fast-fire now through some of the more rudimentary deaths that some of the founding fathers of this country suffered from. But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
Ask me what I'm drinking.
What are you drinking, Shane?
This is an Aspire energy drink, raspberry acai flavored.
Oh, what is that?
Oh man, it is so good. It's a healthy energy, natural caffeine, no calories, no sugars, no carbs, just lightly sparkling and refreshing flavor and energy.
Huh, that's gotta have at least 300 calories in it, doesn't it?
No way, man, zero calories.
Jeez, do you think they sponsor our show?
Not yet. Call me back, Aspire. I love you. We could be so beautiful together. Attention listeners, if we don't get 100 new subscribers on our Spotify this week, we're going to make Mickey Ferguson eat this tube of expired hydrocortisone. So please subscribe for his sake. Thank you.
John Madison, 4th President of the United States, served from 1809 to 1817. He worked as the drafter of the Constitution, Secretary of State under Jefferson, and authored the historic and controversial Federalist Papers. He died on his tobacco plantation in Montpelier, Virginia, on June 28, 1836, of heart failure. He was 85 years old. James Monroe, 5th President of the United States, served from 1817 to 1825. He worked as the Governor of Virginia, Secretary of State again, and later the Secretary of War under Madison. He was also a lieutenant who Washington sent across the Delaware River at the Battle of Trenton. Monroe was a good friend of Thomas Jefferson and served on the University of Virginia's board until he became too sick to continue in his position. Interestingly, James Monroe also passed away on July the 4th, this time 5 years later in 1831. He was the only president to pass away from tuberculosis.
Wow.
John Quincy Adams, son of John Adams, served as president from 1825 to 1829. He was also the first president to lose his second election. He served as minister to several countries as well as Secretary of State, again, under Monroe. During a debate in the Massachusetts House of Representatives, John Quincy Adams voted against a motion to send a submission to the Committee of Military Affairs. Anyways, after a heated exchange, Adams would eventually collapse. He was brought up to the floor, like the floor of the House, to get some fresh air. He mustered up the strength to thank all of his representatives for their service before being escorted to a nearby hospital. He passed away 2 days later from a stroke. He was 80 years old. Okay, final president of the Fast Fire. Old Hickory himself, Andrew Jackson. Served from 1829 to 1837. Jackson was a war-hardened general and served as a formidable debate opponent in 1832 against John Calhoun, who, by the way, was his vice president at the time, regarding raised tariff taxes. He even survived an assassination attempt against him on January 30th, 1835, by beating the man with his walking cane.
I have heard of that.
Late in life, Jackson developed a bad case of congestive heart failure that gave him debilitating, pitting peripheral edema. He passed on June 8th, 1845 from complications from heart failure. He was 78. All right, we're done now. This takes us to the final three presidents I wanted to talk about. This is a string of doozies, let me tell you. Eighth president of the United States, Martin Van Buren, MVB as I plan to call him, was the first president to be born as a U.S. citizen. However, he was actually the only U.S. president whose first language was not English. Hmm. He was raised by Dutch parents and therefore spoke both languages fluently. He was described as a happy-go-lucky man who was an excellent party guest and conversationalist. You can imagine this guy, you know, walking around with the champagne 1840 times and I don't know, whatever they were talking about back in the day. Times. Whatever songs they were listening to. Yankee Doodle on repeat. Yeah. Is that what's going on? Despite his debate ability, MVB did not enjoy his time in office. He describes the happiest days of his life as the day he took office and the day he surrendered office. Many people blamed Van Buren for the financial recession of 1837. His political opponents went as far to refer to him as Martin Van Ruin. Not very catchy. Like, he could have done better. With such an awesome Van Buren name, I mean. Anyways, he would lose to William Henry Harrison in the next election. However, his time in office seemed to reignite him to run for the position again, for some reason. Surprisingly, he gained good traction for re-election, but was denied the Democratic nomination in 1844. So he said 4 years later he would run under his own party, which he founded, called the Free Soil Party. He won, actually, 10% of the popular vote, but was unable to capture a single state in this election. Later in life, MVP spent years overseas in Europe before his lifelong asthma worsened to the point where he had to retire back in the United States at his home in Kinderhook, New York. He passed away on July 24, 1826 at the age of 79. Now, the reason that I found it interesting was on the POTUS website, you know, POTUS.gov or whatever, they call Martin Van Buren's death from complications from his asthma. In actuality, it was more likely a heart attack that killed him, according to people closer to him. Mm-hmm. Just from doing the 10 presidents that I've done so far and reading witness testimony, they are way off with some of these presidents' deaths. I don't know if it's because they just don't care, they have a whole page dedicated to it, but it looks like it hasn't been updated in a while, like since the last president died, and I guess that's the only time they touch it. But
well, they've got like historians doing this stuff, not healthcare professionals.
Well, you'd think a historian would still.
Like, I mean, to them, like that would mean better asthma. Though,
because they would actually look at the witness testimony.
That's true.
Think.
Yeah.
Are there primary documents for it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. No. So there's like newspapers that release that stuff, and I guess that's what they go by. I don't know about how many primary documents, but it just seems like testimony. Like, I read a few testimonies that I don't know where they got it from, but they say differing things, so I don't know.
Interesting.
Good question. Okay, and that, ladies and gentlemen, takes us to the most interesting presidential death of today's episode, President William Henry Harrison. So he was 68 years old at the time he took office, which at the time was the oldest president to be elected. He was presented by the Whig Party, if you've ever heard of the Whig Party, as just like a simple man who lived in a log cabin just sipping on hard cider, which was something I guess they wanted to portray as Martin Van Buren, the previous president, was much more of the champagne sipping type. Harrison, to the contrary, was actually an American hero. During the War of 1812, General Harrison defeated a combination of British infantry and Tecumseh's army at the Battle of Thames that essentially wiped out both fleets of troops. Henry Harrison was elected by the slimmest of margins in the popular vote by just 150,000. However, he won the Electoral College by nearly five times what Van Buren was able to collect. It was like 200 to 40 or something that. He killed him. Once elected, Henry Harrison was stumped on what to actually write for his State of the Union address. You can imagine this guy, right? Like, they were portraying him as this log cabin guy, but he was retired. He was like an army general. He like secluded himself in the Northwest. Like, he wasn't doing anything presidential. And the Whig Party comes out and says, yo, we really need an American hero. So that's what they did, and they pulled Henry Harrison out of the woodwork, literally. anyways, he was not fit for this job, but he was trying his best, obviously. So he was stumped on what to write for his union address, so he decided it would be best for fellow Whig member and theatrical writer Daniel Webster to write his address for him. In it, Webster wrote for Harrison to boast about his war history among the many, like, allusions that they wanted the people to remember about Harrison. Much to Harrison's displeasure, He gave the speech on a cold, rainy day in February of 1841. During the speech, many who attended noticed a distinct cough that interrupted much of the speech. This speech, by the way, lasted an hour and 45 minutes. Longest ever. Not even close. Once done with his speech, he would spend the next month recovering from a cold that led to pneumonia. Shockingly, on April 4th, exactly 1 month after his inauguration, it was reported that Henry Harrison had passed away and that his vice president, John Tyler, would succeed him as president. The country, obviously shocked, would eventually accept the notion that he died of pneumonia. This would be the unexamined opinion until all the way until 2016, when a medical investigation with the University of Maryland determined that the running water inside of the White House was contaminated with typhoid, and that in actuality, it was typhoid that killed William Henry Harrison and may have had even an impact on the next several presidents' early demise. The tragic death of William Henry Harrison also killed something else, the Whig Party. All the funds used by the Whig Party to make Harrison seem like the ordinary simple man he was could not be obtained, reobtained, I should say, after the non-Whig extremist John Tyler took over the office. Which brings us to the final man, which we'll be talking about today, John Tyler. Okay, I'm gonna be honest. This guy is straight up weird. I'm not kidding. John Tyler was a devout Virginian who would father 15 children in his lifetime, with his youngest being born when Tyler was 70 years old.
Whoa.
Nasty. When Tyler did eventually take office, his goal was to pass legislation that would allow the president to set policy instead of Congress. Obviously, this idea was rejected. So his next goal was just to completely eradicate the Whig Party and its ideals, the thing that got him there. Mm-hmm. Now he's like, y'all are whack. I'm getting rid of you. His presidency was largely unremarkable, though. He didn't do that much. His largest accomplishment was approving the annexation of Texas from Mexico, which he had passed 3 days before the end of his term. He tried to gain support of a political party to try for another 4 years, but he could obviously not turn back to the Whigs, and the Democrats wanted no part of his extremist beliefs. He decided instead to surrender and give up the nomination, or give up his support to James Knox Polk, who was also for the annexation of Texas. In 1861, 16 years after his presidency ended, Tyler would side with the Confederacy and would serve in the Confederate House of Representatives. Tyler believed victory by the Confederates was impossible, but worked with their military to devise a plan to capture Washington, D.C. before the Union was able to lift the Union Army. It did not succeed. He was elected to the permanent Congress of the Confederacy, but suffered a stroke before he could ever accept the position, and he died in a Virginia hotel room at the age of 71. That's all I had. What do you think? Which one was wackiest? Which one would you like to know more about?
How did they determine that the White House was contaminated with typhoid so many, like 150 years later?
Yeah, I guess they had to do that's a good question. I need to look more into that. Because that University of Maryland was that study was groundbreaking stuff. We'll talk about it in the next one. But
that's really cool.
I mean, were there other recorded deaths among people who were consuming the same water?
Well, I'll give you a hint about it. Martin Van Buren didn't stay in the White House very often, and he actually died later. He was an older guy when he took office, too, but he actually died later than John Tyler, Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore, and James Knox Polk, which actually served as president after him. So there was a stretch where presidents died almost immediately after their terms, which I guess sparked the speculation. I mean, I don't doubt that Henry Harrison had pneumonia, but certainly drinking typhoid water probably wasn't helping the situation.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to think, 60 years before the Typhoid Mary debacle in New York, that we had something this drastic with typhoid in D.C.
Was Harrison the guy, the tippy canoe and Tyler too? Was that his slogan?
Yep.
Okay, that came to me after you started, and I was like, oh man, that's the guy with the catchiest slogan.
Mm-hmm. So. Tippy canoe, that's him, I think.
What about I Like Ike?
That's not as good as tippy canoe and Tyler too. Come on. That's the best one.
You're telling me Martin Van Ruin isn't the perfect thing to...
Martin Van... Boring.
Yeah, people didn't like him that much.
Poor guy. He's just living his life.
Oh, yeah.
I've been to Monticello.
Monticello is beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Mount Vernon is beautiful. Also beautiful.
I was there while they were filming National Treasure 2.
Get out of here.
The birthday party scene for the president. It was really cool, yeah.
Charlotte, who lived here and worked here at Mount Vernon.
Yeah.
And we're standing right here, sir. This line is an underground tunnel, an escape route that was never found.
I wonder if it's still there.
Only one way to find out, sir.
Well, maybe we should take a look.
Are we allowed to do that? No, I mean, I know you're allowed to do that. You're the president. Can I come with you?
Did you see him, Nicolas
Cage? No, I didn't see Nick Cage, but I saw they were setting up all of the lights, and they were setting up, like, the party scene around back, mm-hmm. you know, where he takes the president down underneath Mount Vernon and stuff. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Nice.
My memory from Mount Vernon is that all of the door frames are really low.
Yeah.
And I thought that was weird. Right. Because not only are we a lot taller now than most people, but George Washington was pretty tall.
I don't think he was as tall as you might think, though.
Wasn't he 6 foot something?
No, I think he was like 5'9".
I know Jefferson was tall because I've taken a picture beside that statue of him that's mm-hmm. supposed to be like life-size rendering, and I only come up to his shoulder. Like, yeah. He was like 6'3".
Oh, wow.
Or something. He was huge. Huge yeah. dude.
Tall guy. Martin Van Buren, by the way. I just happen to know this was 5'5".
So, that's why everyone hated
imagine
him.
Imagine this 5'5" guy running around the party scene, just having a good old time. Like, man. I'm president. But he's talking in some Dutch accent that I can't recreate. I don't know.
Poor dude.
James Madison wasn't much taller. He was like 5'6" or something like that. Well, that's all I had today. It's the end of our first of 4 episodes into the exploration on how presidents die. If you like this episode and want to hear more, give us a like and leave a comment wherever you listen to this episode so we can keep bringing them to you.
I want to talk about Kennedy.
We're getting there.
Because Kennedy got those cocktails.
We're going to dive right into that Zapruder film stuff.
We the people of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, in order to form a more perfect podcast, do hereby ask that you subscribe. Thank you.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.